Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I'm so happy that you're all here. It's Joanna. And I'm really excited for this special bonus call that we have today with Michelle PW on love-based copy. And one of the reasons why I wanted to share Michelle with you and to have this call with all of you is because no matter where you are on the spectrum of copy, and some of you have been writing copy forever and are really advanced, and some of you are more at the beginning of your journey. No matter where you are on that spectrum, I have found this to be true for myself. I'm always working on my copy, to deepen my copy, to, you know, get more on the mark with my copy, all the pieces. And so it's so valuable no matter where you're at. And of course, you need really stellar, effective, powerful copy and understanding of copy foundations, you know, for all of your business communications, whether it's your sales pages, whether it's your emails to your communities, whether it's individual emails, social media, all of that. And so I'm so excited to be able to share all of this with you today and to share Michelle with you. So hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk copy.
Yeah. Good. So before we do, I do want to share a little bit more about you, Michelle. Everyone, I'm going to read Michelle's bio first because it's really impressive. So Michelle PW is a best-selling, award-winning fiction and nonfiction author. On the fiction side, she writes psychological thrillers, mystery, suspense books, and has a popular book blog. On the nonfiction side, she's written 5 books in the Love-Based Business series that share how to sell more with love and build a solid, profitable business on a foundation of love. I love that so much. In addition, she owns a copywriting and marketing company that has sold $50 million worth of products and services. And you can learn more about Michelle at michellepw.com. It's michellepw.com. And all of that is so impressive. And I just really want to add, first of all, one of the reasons why, of all the copywriters out there, that I chose Michelle to bring to you on this is because I have used Michelle and her team and her techniques myself in my copy, and it's just been exceptional and has been so amazing. And honestly, there is not too many people that I know in the industry who've been around as long as I have, who have built really successful businesses, who have not at one point or another or consistently hired Michelle to help them with copy. So it's really just such a privilege and such a treat that we have you here today.
Oh, well, thank you. That's such a wonderful way. What a wonderful way to start Monday. Thank you for all of that.
I'm just so excited. Hand on my heart. So let's dive right in. One of the things that is, I think, so special and effective about how you work, about how you approach copy, is this idea of love-based business and love-based copywriting. Can you even share with us first what that is and how you even came to it, why it's important?
Yes. So how I came to it is, and this is because it kind of helps if I start here and then go into what it is, because I think you guys would probably resonate. Because I know you and I have had conversations about marketing anyways, which have been just really cool on my podcast. So copywriting, of course, is writing, you know, writing all those, you know, emails and everything, nothing to do with putting a copyright on something or protecting intellectual property. And I'd been around since really the beginning of this internet marketing explosion in the mid-2000s. And at the time, it was really generated a lot by men, so which makes sense because men were, you know, men copywriters were certainly dominant before that. So, of course, they would bring their talents and skills to the internet world. So at the same time, this whole coaching industry was kind of coming, you know, and self-transformation and personal development was sort of starting to come into form because the internet really opened the door for women to be able to start businesses. Before that, it was really tough because before that you had to get like rent a brick and mortar place and you couldn't really work out of the home and you know a lot of women had kids, so you know women were not owning businesses at a very high rate before the internet, but the internet really unlocked those doors. So it was this interesting transition that was going on where you had like men sort of leading the marketing conversation with more, I guess, aggressive marketing messages, and then women were a lot of the coaches, and they were really torn about using it because on one hand it felt really hypey and salesy and authentic, and they didn't want that. But then when they would bring this up, the men would say things like, well, you know, and even some women too, for that matter. But they'd say like, you know, it works. stop complaining. Which let's all agree that their hearts were in the right place. Mm-hmm. They're trying to keep everybody from struggling, and that was the best. They did the best they could. So this is not judgmental or harping on that. This is simply, you know, they really were trying to keep people from suffering. So anyway, so then I came along and was writing copy, and I learned from the men. But I had a lot of problems with kind of the over-the-topness of some of it. And then a lot of my women friends in coaching would say to me, Michelle, you need to come up with a new way of writing copy that's not so inauthentic and salesy. And I said, absolutely not. I am not. There are plenty of good copywriting books. I don't need to add any to it. Well, the thought still like kind of still niggled in me because I could still see the issue because it really felt like we had two conversations going on. And it bothered me. And then one day in between 2013 and 2014, it was like December 2013 to January 2014, my friend Susan Liddy, and I think you know Susan too, came out with she called it a book. It is a book, but she never put it on Amazon. But it was called Love-Based Marketing. And she and I were actually in talks about doing a copywriting program anyways. And so I looked at it and I thought love-based copy. And then I thought, okay, well, then what's the reverse of love-based copy? And I thought, that's fear-based copy. And it was like, boom, the entire copywriting, love-based copywriting philosophy just downloaded into me in that moment. I mean, it was amazing. The whole thing just opened up for me. So, and then I wrote the book and started talking about it. But basically, in a nutshell, here's what's going on. This is why there even now to this day, there seems to be two conversations going on a little bit. If you want to, it's really about the heart of persuading. So when you want to persuade somebody, and when you want to persuade somebody to take action, you have to tap into their emotions. There's really no other way to do that. And there's nothing wrong with persuading anyway. So let's also put that out there. Where persuasion is a communication tool, like many communication tools that we have in our toolbox. We are social beings. We live in societies and communities, and you know you're persuading every day and being persuaded every day. And it has nothing to do with business. You're doing it when you're trying to persuade your kids to go to bed at a certain bedtime. So, persuasion is always happening. So there's nothing inherently evil or wrong about persuading. And in order to persuade, you tap into emotions. And you have a choice. You can tap into love-based emotions or fear-based emotions. And for many of us, because we didn't know any better, we're tapping into fear-based emotions because that's what we learned. That's what was modeled to us because nobody really thought about this until recently, really. I mean, I think the internet has also unlocked a lot of discussions about this and really, you know, the transformation industry really you know, for better or for worse, there's a lot of bad things about it too. So, I mean, I'm not gonna, there's a lot of things that frustrate me. But I think there's been some good things too, which is where we've opened up this conversation as well. And, you know, are now really able to see about, you know, how emotions, you know, the whole emotional conversation. So, while that was obviously around before, I feel like it's gotten a lot more juice with the internet. So that's really what's going on. And so really what I'm about is teaching people how to persuade using love versus using fear. And when I say fear-based emotions, I mean, you know, it's not just fear and anxiety and worry. It's also grief, which is not very persuasive, so don't use grief. But and anger and shame. Shame's a very good persuasive, unfortunately. Envy, all of that is what I'm considering under fear-based emotions. So I will pause there and see if you have anything you want to add.
Yeah, no, I love all of this, and it's like even though I already knew so much of this, I'm taking it in to a deeper level. First of all, I'm just so happy that you're explaining in this high-level way what persuasion really is, because I think a lot of times, you know, in integrity, soul-led entrepreneurs, which is who I attract, we think, oh, no, it's out of integrity to persuade. We don't want to do that, but actually that's not true at all, and I love how you put it. It's like throughout the day with everything that we're doing, in one way or another, much of the time we are actually using persuasion tools. In and of themselves, they're not persuasion. In and of itself, persuasion isn't inherently good or bad. Where that may come in is how we use persuasion, and this difference between motivating and persuading through fear versus doing it through other emotions. And I can't agree with you more. I mean, it always breaks my heart when I see marketing out there that are using shaming tactics in particular. For some people, it may, you know, quote unquote, make them buy, but I know and you know that those people that buy out of shame actually never get the results that they desire from the thing that they buy.
Yeah, and you know, and the reason why, I've thought a lot about this, and so just to kind of give you an example of what's going on. So, you know, the problem is that when you use fear to persuade, the people who it's working on are the people who are not that comfortable with their fear-based emotions. And I'm not saying that as a judgmental level. It's not easy walking down the road and becoming more emotionally intelligent and being open to feeling whatever wants to come up. You know, I mean, I do a lot of work on myself, and on those days where fear or grief or something want to bubble up to the surface, no, I'm not jumping up and down excited that it's happening, but I've learned enough that I just relax and let it move through me. So, and the more I fight it, the longer the whole process is going to take. So, but the thing is not everybody's like that, and even people who are, you know, consider them, you know, call themselves spiritually woke or whatever, there's a lot of people who are not there yet. I mean, maybe there's some really, really painful emotions that they just aren't ready to face yet. So we should really look at that with compassion more than judgment. But anyway, so what's going on with the fear-based emotions is when you trigger shame, what you're doing is, so the marketer uses shame, and then the person feels shame, and then the implied promise in the copy, as they continue to read, is that if they buy the product, the shame will go away. And it does. So because we all are taking action to not feel emotions. That's what when I talk about fear-based emotions controlling us, that's what I mean. I mean, you feel something, and then you take some sort of action to not feel it anymore. So then what's happening? The fear-based emotion is controlling you because you're busy creating drama, because it's usually around creating drama or, you know, procrastinating or getting on social media or drinking or overeating or even like exercising too much, which is actually how I dealt with my anxiety, but which is good and bad too. So but it's usually you're taking action. It still wasn't coming from a great place to not feel your emotions. So that's what the promise is. So what happens when you buy because you feel shame and you're trying not to feel shame? Well, you have buyer's remorse. Just like the next day you wake up. I mean, we've all done that. You know, when we started an argument or wasted a bunch of time or drank too much, you know, we're all, you know, what do you think we wake up with? We feel shame and guilt and upset with ourselves because we let the fear-based emotions win. And so that's exactly the energy that you're inviting into your business. So, I mean, it's neither there, here nor there. And obviously, you know, if entrepreneurs can do whatever you want, I'm a libertarian. I very much believe in free choice. But that's why they don't get the results they want, because they're already coming to it with a lot of guilt and resentment for being in there. So yes, the entrepreneur may get the initial money, but it's not going to give you long-term results.
Yeah, it sounds like what I'm hearing as you're talking about is it's really a setup for both the client as well as the practitioner, as well as the entrepreneur.
Yes. Yeah, because how are they going to trust you to, like, if they hit a hard spot, you know, and we all do. I mean, you're here for transformation, so you're only going to get transformation if we face the demons and have the bad days. And so are they going to trust you if you brought them in, if you triggered shame and fear and brought them in that way? Are they going to trust you during their dark moments? Probably not.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to disappear and go into whatever they do. So
yeah.
I'm a firm believer in your marketing process should and sales process should mirror your transformation process.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you can mimic that when you bring them in, the better your results are going to be.
Can you repeat that again? Because I feel like that's a writer downer for everybody. It's really important. I'm writing it down too.
Yes. So your sales and marketing process should mirror your transformation process, the steps that you take them to transform. So when you hear that, I want you to hear that it's okay for your clients, your prospects, to feel something when they're going through your sales process. It's okay to talk about their pain because they are in pain. They need you. But then don't try to either rush in and rescue them, don't try to twist it and make it worse. Just acknowledge their pain and let them sit in it and let them decide if they're ready to change or not. And if they're not ready to change, then fine. Don't shame them to make them change their mind. But if they are ready to change, then you're there for them. That's really what needs to happen.
Yeah, I love that for so many reasons, for all the reasons that you're talking about. And also, and I think you mentioned this, it's like, then it's also not, when you're not using the shame tactic, often when you are using the shame tactic, often what can happen is someone will start to think that the entrepreneur's service is the savior, right?
Yes.
And it can set unrealistic expectations, and it can also set the client up to not take full responsibility. So when you address what's going on for them, when you speak to the fear, but you don't use the shame, you let them be with it, and then decide, it doesn't set them up for that savior mentality, which of course is just bound to fail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because you can't rescue your clients. I mean, I think we've all been there, you know, because
yeah.
The thing is that, you and I both have been around the block enough times to know mm-hmm. that, and I've tried this, so I know, it doesn't matter how much I can see what my clients are capable of. If they can't see it, it's not going to happen. We can't drag them across the finish line. They have to decide for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So tell us more about, I think we have a good idea now of like what loved-based copy is not. Tell us more about what it is.
Okay, so a few things it is like, because I talk about a few foundational principles, and one of them is the pain. So I'll just, since I started that, I'll continue that. So I do believe that you need to address the pain. It's interesting. I think I'm going to have a Forbes article, woohoo, out about the love-based 60 in a week. I know, I'm so excited. Somebody interviewed me. So, and I'm so excited because I feel like I'm breaking out of this transformation industry and getting it into, you know, bigger stuff, which I think really needs to happen.
Yeah, corporate needs this.
I know, and I've tried Forbes, and they rejected me before, so I'm really excited. So, but, you know, fingers crossed, it's not a done deal till it happens. So, but anyway, but I really feel like love is truth. So that's really how I was explaining it to that. It's the difference between, it's the difference, you know, love is, if you are marketing through love, that means it's true. And what's true? I mean, there are bad things and good things. I mean, there's just, this is not about spiritual bypassing, and it's not about rescuing, and it's not about trying to make somebody feel good when they really need to take some action. You know, this is about truth. So it's about being committed and not being attached. I mean, that's what this is really about. So when I talk about pain, I do feel like respectfully acknowledging your ideal client's pain is super important, because your ideal clients truly are in pain, and for you to ignore that, you are spiritually bypassing, and you're being just as bad as, you know, your Aunt Edna, you know, who patted you after your dog died and said, there, it's all gonna, you know, everything's okay, stop crying. Because, you know, and she was doing it because she didn't want to cry, because you were triggering that. It had nothing to do with you. I mean, we all know that it's not going to be okay. But that's what I mean by a lie versus truth. So, but you don't want to. So on one hand, you want to respectfully acknowledge it, but then you don't want to tip over into tying it into anxiety, worry, future spinning, making it worse than it is. That's when you go, when you tip it into suffering, that's when you tip it into fear. Because pain is part of life. We can't get away from pain. People are born who can't feel pain, and they don't live long because their body can't tell them that there's a problem. But you don't have to necessarily suffer. And suffering is what happens when you kind of mix the fear-based emotion with the pain. So let's try not to avoid the suffering and agitate it. That's the way it used to be called. Well, it's still called that way. So when I learned copywriting, I learned you state the pain and you agitate it. What I'm saying is we skip the agitation part, and we just simply state the pain and then move into solution.
I just want to pause you there, because a lot of people that are listening today are in Sacred Depths or have been through Sacred Depths coach training, and you guys see there's a lot of similarity in terms of the tool here with clients in terms of honoring what is, which is really what I hear you saying, Michelle, is that part of the role of the marketing is to honor the pain that is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing I mean, there's nothing inherently bad or evil about acknowledging truth, the truth of the pain.
No, it's quite the opposite. And what you're saying is so important, but you do have to know how to do it in the marketing,
yeah,
so that it doesn't veer into the shaming and the agitation,
yeah,
and the suffering.
So one way. So you asked for. Let me. I'm going to jump to something, because I do want to share something concrete. And so here's a concrete thing about using shame and not using shame. So one of the things that you may have felt, and also, well, before I say this, I also want to say, look, if you've done this in the past, I want you to forgive yourself right now. Certainly, I have an old copywriting training that a few people have bought that I talked about agitating the pain, and that was before I knew better. Mm-hmm. So we have all done things that we may not, you know, be proud of anymore, and that's okay. And you may even in the future do something, you know, fall into one of these things, and that's okay. Pick yourself back up and just recommit to the path and do your best. That's all we can do. Okay, so that said, a typical way that shame, a big way where shame appears is, like, if you're ever in the situation where you have a client, you know, you're on the phone with them, and in a moment they say yes to working with you, and then they send that dreaded email afterwards that says they've changed their mind. So people will send emails, varying emails to the extent of, you know, well, you know, obviously you're not very serious about, you know, becoming a successful business, about your health, about having a great relationship, whatever it is. Because if you did, you would join my program. And you even can see these in sales pages too. When you're writing it down, you get to like, well, you know, what if you don't have the time or the money? And they'll say, you know, again, that variation of, well, obviously you're just not serious about this. If you can't find the time, you know, successful people find the time and money, and you obviously don't. Okay, so then that's the shame way of doing it. Here's a non-shame way of doing it, which is some friends of mine who I helped with their copy years ago, and they had a transformational program. And so when they had the time and money, it was a 10-month program. And, you know, they said, you know what, if you're going to want to, you know, change, transformation at the level that we're talking about is going to require some dark, you know, some, you know, getting into the dark. And there may be some bad times ahead. You know, if you want to have a quantum leap, that's just the reality. And maybe you're not in the position right now where you can afford that. Maybe you've got a family you're trying to take care of, you know, maybe you've got a new baby, maybe, you know, your life circumstances is you can't have that level of emotional upheaval, and that's fine. You know, big hugs, we're still friends, no worries, you know, come back next year, hopefully we're offering again, and it's good. But if you are ready to have this transformation, then strap on and join us. We'd love to have you. Do you see the difference in the energy?
Yeah, I love that so much. And I also want to add that, you know, as I do a version of this for myself, it does not end up equaling less clients at all. I found that when you work in this way, the people that are meant to step in, by giving them that, you know, that kind of response, it actually compels them to step in if they're meant to.
Yes, that's exactly it. Again, it's about truth. I mean, trying to cover up and say, no, you're going to make six figures and seven figures and there's going to be no struggle. I mean, that's BS. Any successful business person knows you're going to fall on your face. It's probably a lot of times.
Yes.
You know, so it's just the whole, you know, but successful people, and I mean, that's probably, I really feel like after studying successful people, probably the biggest thing that sets successful people off from non-successful people is they've got resilience. They're able to pick themselves back up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, so this idea of trying to sugarcoat it and say how easy it's going to be is really a massive disservice, because now you're just setting people up to fail, because when they hit that roadblock, they're going to think there's something wrong with them, or the universe is giving them stories that they don't, that they're not cut out, which is absolutely not true. It's just part of the process.
Yeah, 100%. And what I would add to that, and tell me if you agree with this, Michelle, is that at this point in the transformational industry, enough consumers have been burned by that other type of marketing, that when they see somebody marketing and saying the results are easy peasy, it's like they smell the BS from a mile away.
Yes. I think so, too. I think this is getting to the point where, I mean, I've been feeling this for a while, that this kind of teaching is where we're going anyways, because, yeah, the line is just, it there's too much out of it. I mean, you could do it before the internet, because, you know, there wasn't quite as much marketing messages. I mean, when I was a kid, because I'm old, you know, I only had, like, you know, we had four TV stations and, you know, some radio stations and a newspaper, and that was it. So you weren't, I mean, there's direct mail, but you couldn't inundate people as much as you can now. And so I think that's part of, you know, it's been our savior and our destroyer, but, you know, that having that many messages, I think has allowed us to educate ourselves.
Yeah, agreed. Any other foundational pieces around love-based copy that are important for us to be thinking about?
Yes. So the other thing is, and this is kind of, so you need to know your ideal client. Thank you for reminding me. I know I got off on that. So
it's so fascinating.
I know, and that's the problem. It's like I love the Q&A part, but then I forget like some of my teaching points sometimes. So you do need to know your ideal client. So and when I and I liked and what you really want to speak to is their inner values. So it's not just enough about demographics, but it's like really knowing, you know, who they are, what they value, what's important to them. You know, the more you can really understand them, and you can write a letter to them as a you write directly as like a friend, the better this is going to be. So really know who your ideal client is, and that's going to be very important. And then the other thing is do your own work. And you're all with Joanna, and I mean this is one of the reasons why I was always so, you know, I've just been such a champion and huge, you know, loved all of your work because you know. On the outside, looking in, you know, and watching your marketing messages, you know, you really mirror that, because not only are you teach your you know everybody how to become an exceptional coach, but then you also, through the process of coaching them how to become exceptional coach, you have them do their own work. So that is just so valuable, because part of what needs to happen, and we've kind of touched on this, is, you know, if you are triggered by your own scarcity or worries about money, and we've all been there. So again, this is nothing to be bad. It's nothing to beat yourself up over. But it's going to be really hard to hold the love base, because the thing is that I'm convinced that the people who are sending those shame messages when somebody backs out of their program, I mean, they're doing it out of their own fear. So again, it's compassion. It's not that they're trying to make other people feel bad, and they're not trying to screw up their own business. They're just so worried now themselves. So their reaction to the fear is to send that shame-based message out. So the more you can sit in your own emotions, the more this is going. You're going to be able to, no matter what else is going on around you, you're going to be able to continue to remain committed to everybody getting their highest good, including your financial needs met, by the way. That's definitely part of it, but not attached to the process. The more you can not be attached to X number of people in your program, or X number of sales, or I need this person that I'm speaking to today to buy. The more you are attached to a specific outcome, the harder this is all going to be, because then you're going to sit down and write an email, and you're going to do it unconsciously, but you're going to fall into the shame and the fear, because you're going to be so attached to, like, this email has got to make some sales. So, and the thing is that the more you can not be attached, the more you can be open up to, like, all the different ways the universe may want to support you. Like, maybe you get a couple VIP clients, or maybe money comes in another way. So that's kind of how, you know, that's what you have to really be focused on. So it's really just about, and this is going to help you with sales too, by the way. So it's like the more you can do this, the more you can help you with sales, the more you can help. And then you're going to be able to think. So there's a lot of stuff that people will say, like I don't have any problem with actually talking and saying something, you know, like if you're on the phone with somebody and they said, you know, I'm not going to do this, and you can say, well, okay, so what are you going to do, you know, how are you going to fix the problem? You know, there's nothing wrong with saying something like that if you're coming from it if your mindset is, you're just genuinely curious and you want to know, and you're trying to hold them to that safe container. Because the thing is that maybe you know, if they're reacting, this is like kind of like with the coaching calls. There's nothing wrong with probing questions. If you're doing it to try to twist them and make them say yes, that's the problem. But if you're doing this because you're just genuinely holding space for them to kind of work through their own emotions, then it's all completely different. So when you're writing those emails out, you can still write the emails with things like, you know, it's fine to have an urgency. I mean, it's fine to say things like, hey, we start today and we're ending the bonuses. There's nothing wrong with that, because the answer, because quite honestly, you know, programs do start. You know,
they have start dates.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got your program set up, you don't want somebody coming in, you know, 2 months down the line, and yeah, you need to tell people, and we do stand in our own way. And so sometimes having that deadline is exactly what we need. And it's perfectly fine to say, you know, I've got 10, you know, I'm going to offer 10 private calls, and that's it. It's just the problem is when you lie about it. And so that's the thing. Like, if you really So that's you know, when you're using the urgency bad, that's the problem. So you can still use urgency. You can still use some of these tools. Just come from it from a standpoint of like your of creating a buying environment to help your perfect ideal client say yes, versus just trying to twist anybody's arm to say yes.
Yeah. Okay, I want to pause here because you just said so much. You're so rich in such a short period of time, and I just want to pull out some pieces that I heard because they feel so important on so many levels. So one of the things, I'm going to work backwards a little bit, but one of the things that I heard you, we talk a lot in Sacred Depths and in Into the Depths about containers and the importance of the coaching container and the importance of the healing container. And one of the things I really heard you say, Michelle, is that marketing and writing copy is a way of holding a container with the people that are coming in contact with you and reading that material. And the more that we can be cognizant that, like, there is opportunity in that writing to hold space for another human being, or many other human beings, like, that is just right there. I think that's just such a mindset piece that is a pearl of wisdom. Another piece that I heard you say is that, and of course, anyone that's on this call knows it always goes back to the inner work, or a lot of it goes back to the inner work. And if you're not doing your own inner work, just like how we approach coaching one-on-one or one-to-many, if you're not doing your inner work, you're not going to come, same with the copy, you're not going to come to the copy in a clean way. And in a way that's in full and integrity, and when that happens, you can veer into the fear-based writing as opposed to the love-based copy. And, you know, what I would add to that, just because I know my people, is that, you know, for some of us, when we come to our copy and our marketing and we're not totally clean, we, you know, haven't done our inner work, it can veer into the fear-based that we've been talking about mostly on this call, which is, you know, kind of moving, speaking, activating, agitating shame in the reader. But for other of us, we go the completely opposite pole, which is we come from our own shame, and then we don't stand up enough for the work in the writing. So it can kind of go either way, if we're not showing up with those energetics. And then the other piece that I want to pull out that you said that's so important around knowing who your ideal client is, you said a lot around that, but one of the pieces I want to pull out in particular is to know their values, because this is something else we look at Sacred Depths when it comes to coaching. The best way to help another human being and to make connections and to activate them and motivate them and help them go deep is to know what their values are and what drives them. And what I heard you say, Michelle, is the same in the marketing. The more that we can know if our ideal client, if they value family or if they value integrity or if they value pleasure, you know, whatever their values are, that is a big component of love-based copy. Driving them through their values versus through their fear.
That's exactly how you're persuading. So that's really it. You know, I mean, part of it is a lot of what I'm doing is sort of the unwinding of stuff. But yes, the more you can tap into like the hope and the transformation and what their values are, then you're starting to persuade with love. Because you're going into what is, but you're not doing it. So this is where hope can tip into fear, because it can. So this is again the whole like, oh, you can, you can make $1 million and you know, or actually six. I don't see very many million dollars. I see like a lot of six figures, you know, in your, you know, without doing much work. That's the hope. That's hope tapped into. That's hope. That's a fear-based hope. I don't really know what to call it exactly. It's probably like, you know, tapping into like the fantasy. It's probably, maybe that's the word. But So I'm not talking about tapping into fantasy, because that's the fear of it. The truth is, you absolutely can have everything that you want. It's just how much, you know, how hard do you want it? You know, how much do you want to work for it? Are you willing to do what it takes? And if you're not willing to do what it takes, then that's fine. So it's like,
right, no shame there.
It's like entrepreneurship is not for everybody. Doing what they can to have find your soulmate is not for everybody. I mean, you know,
right.
Right.
And where I think it gets into also is like for each practitioner or expert is like, this is what I've seen, what's required or what it takes, and this is the work that we would do together.
Exactly. And if you just are very clear about it, and then the people who are meant to work for you, work with you, I mean not work for you, work with you, and your soul people, you're going to speak to them, and they're going to be like, oh my God, this is it. This is what I need to do. And the ones who are willing to really, you know, we all get to that point where we're, well, I mean, if for those of us who have transformed, we've all gotten to that point where it's too painful to not transform. And when it is too painful to not transform, you know, when I've done all of this stuff, you know, I knew the path would be rocky, but at that point I knew that staying put was just not an option. Like, you know, I mean, for a year, if you're following any of my, you know, I've been talking a lot about like my fiction and hiding from it for years. And when my mother was dying, I was sitting in ICU with her holding her hand, and I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to die with my books inside me and let go and let God. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things I kept chanting to myself. And the thing is that, but that's the thing. It's like I got to the point where I knew it was going to be painful. It was going to be a rocky world bringing my fiction out in the world, but I could not handle the fear and the pain of facing myself on my own deathbed, knowing that I didn't get my books out. So that's the thing. So that's a wide eyes wide open choice, as you know, or that's, you know, is that we know exactly what we are doing, what the compromise is, and what we're moving forward to.
And that is really the most in integrity way to draw someone into our work, too.
Yeah.
It's the most in integrity way, and it's the way that sets everybody up for success and actual results.
Yes. Because then they know, and then when they hit the spots, they're not blindsided. They're not like, I thought this was going to be easy. And that's always been a problem with, I think, our industry. That's one of the things, like, you know, follow your passion is going to be easy. It's like, no, that's not really true. I mean,
Yeah, no, it is. It's and then it creates that shame that you're talking about when it doesn't happen easy, or the frustration and just wanting to give up.
Yeah, because they think, well, or they think, you know, one of the things that I always get is, and I get this a lot with marketing pieces, like I had a good friend who started this new coaching, and she was, and it did, nobody signed up. And so I'm listening to her, and she's talking to me about this universe is telling her that maybe she shouldn't do this and she needs to find this direction. I'm listening, and I finally said, so, okay, so you had your webinar. How many emails did you send out after your webinar? There's silence. One. I said, you sent out one email. Yeah, I sent out the recording. I said, you didn't send out anything out? No. He said, well, that's why nobody signed up. It's not the universe. It's your marketing. So that's the thing. And that's the problem when we fall into that. We, you know, all the stories, and that's just really not true.
Yes. And I think you're also making an important point that I know a lot of people on the call want to hear, need to hear, which is that oftentimes when we don't market, it's because we're scared that we're going to be too pushy, we're going to fall into that fear-based that you're talking about, where it's going to be too much. But there's a difference between outreaching persistently and the fear-based marketing. And when we're using these love-based principles that you're talking about today, Michelle, it actually makes it easier to do more consistent and persistent outreach because the energy is so different.
Exactly, because there is nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with doing an offer a day, quite honestly, like by posting an offer a day on your Facebook page. If that's, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong or salesy or hypey about that. There are some beautiful models out there, like Elizabeth Purvis is one, which, she's always posting an offer.
Yeah, always. Yes. Yeah.
But I read almost all of them because she wraps them into such wonderful content and wonderful stuff. And so, you know, so the idea of it is that you're getting content listening to her, but then, like, if you know you need to go deeper and work with her, then, you know, there's the offer, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, and that's when you come from a space of you're really out there sharing your work and talking to the right people, you know, you can share some of your highest, you know, your biggest work, you know, your best insights, because the people who are ready and activated are going to be drawn to that, and they're going to want to say yes. And the thing is that you don't know where people are, so your ideal clients, you know, people are moving in and out of being ideal clients all the time, because we all have a million things pulling at us. So, you know, there might be one day where, you know, parenting stuff is more important, or health stuff is more important, or relationship is more important. So even if you happen to be promoting entrepreneurial stuff, maybe your ideal client didn't see those other messages because they were sucked into something else. So, but that fourth day, they are ready for your message. So there's nothing wrong with it. There really isn't. It's perfectly fine to do that, just as long as you're coming from this state of, you know, you're sharing your work, your wisdom, and the right people are going to say yes, and the wrong people aren't, which is all perfect. But regardless, everybody will get something out of it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I love that. I imagine there might be some questions. Are you open for taking a couple of cues if anybody has
yes.
any?
I would love to take questions.
Awesome, yay. Let me get us into that raise hand mode. So I just want to say again, like, we are so lucky to have Michelle here to answer questions. It really is such an opportunity. So any questions that you have on anything that Michelle has been sharing about, anything we've been talking about, or even just another, you know, copy question that's been on your mind, star two. Show.
Hey.
Hi.
Very excited listening to the recording, or actually the call, because copy is one of the areas that I get a little bit jammed up with, you know, maybe too much information, too technical, and so then it ends up being more what I think that the person is going to want to hear. And so, like, how do you create copy in a way that you are speaking to that person, you know, let's say from your website or in your brochures or printed material, if you haven't really talked to them, you know, like in a interview setting or like a,
yeah.
In a, yeah.
That's a great question, because yes, that's very easy to get lost in the weeds and overshare. And a lot of that comes from, like, I did that for a long time with oversharing. In fact, maybe I did. I still did. Maybe I still gave too much content in this. So usually that stems from wanting to prove your own value. At least it does with me. So yes, and again, that's something to really sit with. So, but the way to really get around it is, first off, be really clear. So there's some warning signs that you can look at. One of them is that if you've made up a lot of marketing language that makes sense to you, or you have fun and clever, you know, acronyms, try not to use that language. So I will tell you right now, if you have to explain what a term means or a word means, you are in the weeds, and you're losing people. And so that's probably the fastest, easiest thing to clean up. And then also the other thing, though, is to really stay with where your ideal clients are. So the thing is that where, you know, so really when, so the thing is that we've all moved through our processes, right? So we are, we're on the other side and we're reaching back. The problem is that we can, because we're on the other side, we can see so clearly what's here and we want to get really excited and talk about this. But the people, who are reaching back to, they can't see it. They are in the fog on the other, you know, across the divide. So what we, so the biggest gift we can do is we can remember, what it was like being in that fog, and we can speak to what's the, what they're, where they're at in the fog. So, so I realize that, because all of you are doing transformational coaching, so I totally understand that when somebody works with you, they are going to get XYZ ABC you know, results. And sometimes even if you talk to your ideal clients, they're gonna get really excited. It's like, well, I hired you for this, but I got this, and this was so great. And so then you're gonna think like, okay, I got to talk about, you know, what they got, and that was so great. But no, don't talk about what they got, and it was so great, because a lot of times they don't even realize that they even needed that until after they started to work with you and saw the results. So just stick with, what are they hired you? What are the, what's the pain that's causing them to reach out and look for your solution? And the more you can keep yourself in that, in where they are at, the easier it's going to be that you don't get slipped into all the kind of, or don't get into the weeds of the process either, because, you know, people really actually don't want to hear the weeds about what your process is. They because they don't actually really care. They just really want to hear that you understand them, and you understand where they're at, you understand their problems, and you have a proven solution that will get them to the other side. But what it actually is of less importance than getting to the other side. And quite honestly, if you try to like get into the weeds and start sharing stuff because you're trying to be giving, you're probably again doing more of a disservice, because people are going to have a feeling that you can help them without, you know, that they can help themselves, like, oh, I learned so much from this that I can go and do it myself, which usually is not the case.
Well, actually, part of my practice is helping my patients to learn how to heal themselves.
That's fine. But the thing is that so just stick where that is. And so you're not going to teach them how to heal themselves until you're working with them, right? So that's what I mean. Don't get into the weeds like everything you can do.
Yeah.
I agree. We all, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we all are like, I mean, I'm certainly teaching copywriting, and I have a copywriting school that, but part of what it is that, you know, it would be great to work with me, but then if you also could do it yourself, that's great too. So I think we all, you know, all of us grown-ups want our clients to grow up and heal them, you know, and work with themselves.
Right.
I love that. I love that question. And also, thank you. So thank you, Cho, and thank you, Michelle, for all of the pearls in that answer. I was thinking to myself, you know, one of the things that I often say to people is don't be too smarty pants when you're marketing, which I think is like kind of one of the pieces you addressed in there. You know, like as practitioners with all of this experience, like we understand what our clients need, but what we know that ultimately they're going to need or they're ultimately going to get is not necessarily the place to start for them to take those first steps into the work to get what they want. So, yeah, so true.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize this when I was, I mean, where I started my journey, you know, I had terrible anxiety and worry, and I didn't actually start like really sitting with my emotions because I wanted to heal my anxiety and worry. In fact, I didn't even start with sitting with my emotions because I wanted to sit with, like, if anyone had explained the process of sitting with my emotions, I think I would have just, I don't know what I would have done. It would have been, but I mean, I didn't want to hear that. I just knew I was in so much pain, I had to do something different. So,
yeah.
In retrospect, it would have been a disservice to tell me what the process was, because if I had known what I was getting into, I may not have done it. But then once you're in the middle, then you're committed and then you're stuck. So anyway.
Good. Okay, Okay, we have one more question. We'll take this other question real quick. Anne.
Hey there. Actually, Joe's question was 80% of my question, which is good. So hopefully this is short. One of the things in the realm of oversharing and getting out in the weeds and being too smarty pants, I'm hearing you saying the frequency of marketing contact, the frequency of copy, isn't really the relevant thing.
No.
And I know I get overly wordy, overly detailed, and I've had people tell me, oh, you know, your marketing copy, you need to make it short and something people can read in 15 seconds, something people can read in a minute. Oh, you need to have a video with it. I hate having to watch people's videos, so I don't want to make people watch my videos, so I don't do them. So as I am in a process of rebooting and reworking everything that I do, is there a sweet spot for length of copy kind of beyond which it really doesn't matter if you're weedy or not, it's just more than people really want?
Okay, this is a wonderful question. Yes, no, it makes total sense, and I love that you asked this question. So first of all, I hate watching people's videos too. And they do work, but only about 25% of the population actually watches video. So let's just, now, that 25%, it's probably more now because there's so much more video. Like, I mean, I would call myself not a big video fan, but I will watch videos if I have to. But yeah, it's like there's only 25% of the population, I guess I should say this, who love watching videos. So now those people who watch videos tend to take action at a higher level, which is why you're hearing that. Because when you tap into videos, you get a higher conversion rate from the people who are watching than not. Okay, so, but that all aside, it doesn't mean you have to do it. And it doesn't, and some of the stuff like a minute, again, we're focused on the process, which I can understand because it's hard and it feels like if you have no rules, it's going to be really, it's difficult. But the reality of the situation is you can have messages be as long as you want or as short as you want. And that in itself does not make an effective message. What makes an effective message, I mean, probably the biggest thing is if you're boring or not. So so you can't bore anyone to buying from you. Dan Kennedy said that. But that's the thing. So the moment somebody stops reading, that's when you need to stop, or stops watching, that's when you need to stop the message. So how do you know if you do this? Okay, so one way is to simplify. So when you send out a message, just pick one small point you want to make. Don't try to put in 20 points, put in one, and make it as small as possible. And then just have enough words in there that explains that point. If it ends up being 1 minute, it ends up being 15 seconds, it doesn't matter. It ends up being 5 minutes. Just as long as it's compelling and you're not overwhelming people with 5 million details, it's going to be successful. So a lot of times stories can really help. And stories tend to get a little longer anyways because you have to tell the story and then you have to explain it. So that in itself is going to make your messages be longer, but they're not going to feel longer because they're not going to be boring. So does that help?
It does. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love that. And it's a really good reminder. I forget sometimes to use stories.
Yes.
In my copy. So, Michelle, I really want you to tell us more about, you mentioned that you have a copy school. Can you just tell us more? You've shared so many pearls of wisdom here and so much good stuff, but if we want more, how can we get it?
Yes, thank you. So I do have Love-Based Copy School, which is a 90-day program, and it's at lovebasedcopyschool.com. And it's got a lot more in-the-weeds training. So features and benefits and headlines and subheads. If you're really wanting to like get into the nitty gritty, that's there. So lots of videos. But I also have PDFs because, like I said, I am not a big video fan. So you can either watch the videos or you can read the PDFs or you can do both. And so the PDFs are not exactly a transcript, but they're close. So so you can follow along. Now, the beauty of this Love-Based Copy School is that I believe that, while, I mean, getting the information is great, but what's really going to help is if you write the copy and you get feedback. So where the real power of this course is that I have a form. So there's exercises for every module, and you do the exercises, and then you post them. And then right now it's me, but I also have backup copy coaches who also will pop in from time to time if things get a little crazy for me, or if I'm out, if I'm traveling. So we will actually give you feedback. And then once a month, I also have a group call where we actually will also critique copy and give Q&A and all that other stuff. So it's lovebasedcopyschool.com. And for everybody, you guys get $100 off. It's $297 for the 90 days. You get the training all the time, but you only have access to the forum and the Q&A calls for 90 days. And then if you want to continue, you can. I've got some for a discounted rate. You can continue that. But it's $297, and I have a $100 coupon for everybody. So you just fill in JL for our fearless leader, JL100, and then you get $100 off.
And that's good for a week.
Yeah. I love it. I'm chuckling because I don't think there's ever been a coupon code with my initials before. I feel so
well. I'm sitting there going. I was trying to think if it's a JL. I thought, JL. And we all had JLo going on here with the Super Bowl, so it's very.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. I always provide these bonus calls because so much information and wisdom and richness comes through them, and I do it on topics that I know the people in my community need, which is all the reasons why I want to share today. And I do also have to say, if there is anyone who you really want to go deeper with the beyond what we got today, which is so much, I really recommend Michelle. She is the queen. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing this time with us today and sharing these important ideas and helping us look more deeply at copy in this way. I've taken a lot of notes and I've learned a lot, and I know it's been so valuable, so just thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast. You were great. So it was just great chatting about this, so thank you.
Yay. Yeah, thank you. I always love talking to you. Wonderful. So we'll follow up with more information on if you want to connect more with Michelle or with the program. And again, thank you so much, Michelle. Bye, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
The moderator has left the conference.